We had a launch party that we held at the Innovation Center here in Buffalo. So we invited every company at the Innovation Center, all of our friends, all of our family. We probably had, maybe 100, 150 people walking through the space that night. But we were able to do a countdown launch with them. So it was cool because we were able to launch it with everybody in the room. And there were a couple of like mishaps that happened. We were ready to we hit the launch button, but then there were like a few agreements we needed to check mark off. I was like, oh wait, let's do that countdown again, and I think it happened twice, and we're like, all right guys, third time. Last countdown.
Welcome everyone to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Baubert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, we can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset, learn, and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us! Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. I am here with Oscar Pedroso. Oscar, what's up, man? How are you today?
Doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
Dude, I'm excited. You are a graduate of U of R, obviously Rochester being my hometown. Kickstarter 2015, you guys reached your goal in 3 days. I guess you capped over 300K in total funding. You currently have a Republic campaign and have almost raised $200,000 on that campaign, where ultimately, to my understanding, I can own a fraction of the company. And that company is Thimble. If you're listening to the audio, you don't see it, but I see the logo right there on your chest. Oscar, I'm fascinated with your story. Tell us what Thimble is and maybe a little bit of a story of how you came up with Thimble and exactly what it does.
Sure. Thanks so much, Ben. So Thimble is a K-12 curriculum that teaches kids robotics, coding, and technology skills. And so we do that through a series of project-based kits, also known as Thimbles. and that includes a lesson software where you can log on and get access to tutorials. And then there's also training for teachers for successful implementation.
Got it. Got it.
Yeah.
So it's a kit. What comes inside this kit exactly?
So I mean, there's 16 different kinds. Mm-hmm. So it's the curriculum is organized by skill level. So there's beginner, intermediate, and advanced. So someone who's never tinkered with electronics before would start off with our creator set, which is basically an introduction to basic circuits and programming. But everything builds on itself. So the kit that comes after that is a Wi-Fi robot, where you're learning how to build your own remote control car. You're learning how to build a controller to navigate the robot. So it's really, you're handling real sensors and various components. So it's less toy-like. It's more trying to get kids to understand what the world is made of, what your phones are made up of, and give them a decent understanding so they can at least develop an interest in technology over time.
Yeah, give them a decent hands-on understanding on exactly like what's going on inside the phone. I'm wondering, is that kit sealed? Can we look inside the kit?
Yeah. No, this one. So this one's our Wi-Fi light switch. So every kit has a theme for the most part. So this one is a Wi-Fi light switch where the kids are learning about smart home technology. Nowadays you can turn the lights on or off from a phone in your home. People have Nest thermostats. There's different kinds of technologies. So, you know, in this particular kit, there's a little printed circuit board, otherwise known as a PCB. You get to solder different components. Eventually, this gets mounted onto a wall, and then through a servo and Wi-Fi, that's how you're able to get the servo to turn the light on or off, basically, on a, using like a traditional light switch. But yeah, I know I'm not doing it justice showing it here, but but yeah, you get some goodies here, and this one entails soldering. So, you know, we raise the bar a little bit there as far as like how technical kids get with these.
And there's virtual training, there's instructions. Is this the kind of thing, you know, that I can just go online and purchase for my kids or a friend, or is this something that's exclusively for schools?
No, you can certainly buy it for your kids or nephews and nieces. We originally started working with homeschool families, so it was very much a service intended for building at home. Mm. But over time, we found that some of the parents that we were working with identified as teachers and felt that this was a good type of activity to do in the classroom, you know, during a technology class or an elective or an after school program. So we've over time eased our way into working with schools. And now that's the majority of our business that we do.
Going into schools and providing ultimately, in a lot of cases, virtual learning is huge. So providing this way to virtually learn, get your hands on it. The students, I can imagine, can take it home, work with their parents. I love the concept. I want to walk through kind of a chronology of Thimble, because then we can better understand it. And then I know today, ultimately, someone can invest in, and hopefully the Republic campaign, we'll talk about that in a moment. Let's get started with ultimately why you founded Thimble, a little bit about that process. We'll go into the Kickstarter campaign, then we'll go into the Republic campaign. But I mean, Oscar, where were you 10 years ago? Was this something that you thought you would found? Just tell me a little bit about your background and where you were 10 years ago, you know?
Yeah, I think 2011. So 10 years ago, I had already embarked on my entrepreneurial journey. I started my first ed tech company, which was called Gradfly. And that was online journals for engineering students to showcase their projects. Think of it as like a LinkedIn for technical people. Similar to like how an artist develops a portfolio of their work, we wanted engineers and similar professionals to also be able to document their work. Hmm. And prior to that, I had been working in college admissions. So my whole life I've spent in education. So
yes,
that's where I connect the dots throughout my career. Starts in college as a part-time admissions officer when I was a student. And then after I graduated, got a full-time position at U of R working at the School of Engineering. And there I was particularly responsible for recruiting students. The types of students that we were recruiting were mostly in inner city schools. And that was pretty important because a lot of these kids had never heard of engineering before, especially like optics engineering, chemical engineering, like very specific niche engineering disciplines. And mm-hmm. That was the fun part, is trying to get kids to consider it as a possible career path. And we had different types of activities for them to do to get them interested. But that's really when it dawned on me that there was a problem in the education sector as far as getting kids' exposure to different technology disciplines and getting them to think outside your typical career paths like business, law, medicine, and so forth. And that was also the first time I got to work with kids who look just like me. I'm Latin American. My parents are from Central America, first generation. So education was also very important to them, at least for my brother and I, to finish high school, finish college. And after admissions, I worked as I started my own company for the first time. It was a tutoring and application consulting business. So it was really just me. I developed all this expertise working in admissions, and I was helping kids basically craft their story and apply to the colleges of their dreams. So I did that for a few years, and eventually I got bored of that. I really wanted to do something more impactful, and I'd always envisioned working as part of a larger team. And so those were that was like right before I started leaning towards building Gradfly, which I mentioned earlier. And then fast forward to right around 2014, 2015, I was volunteering my time at a local makerspace in Rochester, New York. We were, every Monday night, we would teach families how to build different types of electronics. And that's really where we discovered there was an opportunity, because a lot of these parents wanted us to tutor their kids. They wanted us to teach them how to code, how to build robots. And within about 6 months, we had built a list of about 200 families that wanted us to tutor them. That was not feasible by any means.
Yeah.
And so what we ended up doing was proposing this monthly subscription service where we would make a project, deliver it to your home. We would record ourselves teaching you how to build it. And that was really like, you know, what led to the Kickstarter campaign, is maybe these 200 families that were our initial followers, and sort of blew up when we launched the campaign. But those were, you know, pretty much all the events that led up to that.
And the Kickstarter campaign was a massive success very quickly. And to my understanding, most Kickstarter campaigns never even get funded. Tell us a little, is there something you did different? Do you think that people just really resonated with the education system you had built? Like, why do you think you were successful? How did you market it? As usual, I'm asking like five questions at once, but I want to know everything, man. Like, tell us about this success, because a lot of people fail on Kickstarter, Oscar.
Yeah, it was a process. I mean, we'd been working on Thimble as an idea for about a year and a half before we finally made a decision to launch on Kickstarter. And there were a variety of things we were doing at the time to generate interest. We were going to maker fairs, which I don't know if you're familiar with maker fairs, but they're basically fairs where companies and hobbyists and business owners will showcase different types of products, anywhere related to 3D printer, arts and crafts, electronics. It's a lot of fun, but that was probably the first time I think we went to the New York City one and we exhibited. We had nothing to show other than a prototype. And that was the very first time we got someone to come to our table and they threw their credit card on the table wanting to buy a subscription.
Yes.
And you never forget those moments, because you're like, okay, cool. And all we could really say at the time is like, thank you so much, but we don't have anything to sell right now, but here's this email list if you want to follow us. And we kept doing things like that. We went to a maker fair in Rochester, Buffalo, Southern Tier. And then we also were pretty active on Reddit. We were asking the community on different subreddits, homeschool, electronic subreddits, what they thought of this idea. And that was also pretty monumental for us, because within a week we had built a email list of about 1500 people. And so you had the 200 families from the makerspace. We were, you know, we had the small community that really liked what we were doing. And in that particular thread on Reddit, we got both good and bad feedback. So, you know, and they was just both positive and negative feedback were just as good. You always want the good and the bad.
Constructive.
Yeah. And then I would say those were like probably the big things. And then creating a compelling video, a concise video that could tell our story and why we were working on Thimble.
So I don't know exactly how this works, but you get on Kickstarter, you press publish. What happens next? Did just the backers just fly in, you know, rush in immediately? Tell us about what exactly happened and how it felt once you started to see you're getting backed.
So I would say it was 6 months of planning before we launched the Kickstarter.
Yes.
And we tried to do some PR initially, which really didn't help that much. You know, and usually people won't write about you until you're some kind of success on Kickstarter. And that milestone needed to be selling $25,000, which is what our initial goal was. So, yeah, I would say the big things that really mattered for us was sending out weekly updates on how everything was going. We had a launch party that we held at the Innovation Center here in Buffalo. So we invited every company at the Innovation Center, all of our friends, all of our family. We probably had, you know, maybe 100, 150 people walking through the space that night. But we were able to do a countdown launch with them. So it was cool because we were able to launch it with everybody in the room. And there were a couple of like mishaps that happened. You know, we were ready to, we hit the launch button, but then there were like a few agreements we needed to check mark off. You know, I was like, oh, wait, let's do that countdown again, you know? And I think it happened twice. And we're like, all right, guys, third time, last countdown. And then, you know, we had computers and everybody could also pledge on their phones. So that first day, though, we ended up bringing like $2,000, which doesn't sound like a lot. But when we woke up the next day, I think we were like at 15K from everybody sharing, you know, on social.
Right.
And then later that day, on the second day, we ended up hitting our 25K goal. You know, so we were blown away because it was a month and a half campaign. And we really weren't sure that we would be able to sell $25,000 in a month and a half. So we were completely wrong about that. But yeah, that was a pretty big deal because, like I said, we weren't sure that this had legs. So, and we were putting ourselves out there.
It sounds like it had eight legs. I mean, you guys raised over 300,000 in total. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was 297 technically, but then there were a couple post Kickstarter events where you can continue to sell. And we ended up doing about 330,000.
Congratulations, man. And now we're 5 years later, right? And
yes.
I want to talk about this new campaign because this is a new opportunity where people can invest. But before we get there, tell us about the previous 5 years. When it comes to actually shipping out and actually implementing, that's one thing I hear, that implementing a successful Kickstarter campaign can be just as hard as becoming successful in it in the first place. Did you run into roadblocks, or tell me how that implementation worked out?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a roller coaster. I think what made it challenging was the fact that we are a hardware business, you know, that we're in this business of developing kits, and not just one. Like, there's, you know, a total of 16 now, and that all took R&D, a team of engineers, testing, sourcing components, manufacturing. You know, like, there were so many moving parts, and there was always something that hit the fan, you know, whether it was like shipping delays or we were using the wrong components. There's a lot of trial and error. Even though we had a qualified team, we still had some newbies who, you know, had never manufactured a product before.
Sure.
And you combine that with trying to sell into different markets. And we initially started with the homeschool market or the parent, anybody who identified as a parent. And then along the way, we were also selling to schools. And then even though we were selling the same products, how we sold it in each market varied quite a bit. So we had to take that into account. And so fast forward to where we are now, we finally made a decision to just focus on one market, which is schools. And while we have an online store where anyone can buy our kits for their kids, you know, we're still spending most of our time, effort, and money on the school market, just because that's where we're having the most success.
And so I've never heard of Republic until this campaign. That's no fault other than my own. But to my understanding, do I invest in the, like, do I own a revenue share of the company, or how does this work if I invest on Republic?
Yeah, so Republic's great, and it's very similar to WeFunder, which is another crowdfunding platform. It's at the discretion of the business that's, you know, putting on this fundraising activity on Republic. For us, it's a convertible safe note. So it has a valuation cap and a discount. And so you technically own a piece of the company when the business raises a future Series A round, when these notes will get turned into equity, basically. So you own a small piece of the pie, and you know, that is our goal, is to raise on Republic, and then we have different milestones along the way over the next 3 to 5 years. But the goal is to do this Republic campaign and eventually get to a Series A 12 to 18 months later.
I love that concept because obviously what you're doing is so important for schools, for students. And we're at the time we're recording this, I have to kind of give a preface. This won't come out for many weeks after we record it. And even at this time, like, we're inching towards 200,000. By the time this comes out, maybe we have hit that. And that's the amount of people that have backed this campaign and that are investing even just a little tiny piece for their niece in Thimble. So just in those numbers alone and in the Kickstarter success, coming in not knowing a tremendous amount about STEM products or about Thimble hands-on, I see how much the community and how much the education system's backing it. And I'm like, Ben, it sounds like you should be paying attention to this. This sounds like it might be big. I joked before this, I joked that I don't even know what STEM stands for. So if someone is curious what a STEM kit is and they're like, Ben, you're an idiot, they already know. But what exactly is STEM and what's the value of a STEM kit?
Yes. Yeah, so STEM is an acronym and it stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. Sometimes you'll sometimes you'll hear people say STEAM. So the A in that case stands for art.
Okay.
Sometimes your stream, which the R in some cases can mean religion or research. It's a little bit of an alphabet soup, but we stick to STEM. You know, there is art, some artistic activity in almost all of our kits. So, but for those that have never heard of that, it's an acronym used in schools, and yeah, we're focused on just teaching kids technology at the moment, but we've thought about branching out into the sciences. But for now, it's mostly very technical on the programming and engineering piece.
Which is super necessary. I mean, I went for liberal arts basically, and I didn't understand the technical programming piece. And I'm a 30-year-old adult, and I'm like, I kind of want to go back to school so I could attend robotics class and I could get my hands on these things at a younger age. Because it seems like, I mean, you tell me, when a student, when a young adult, when a child has their hands on these and they're building at a younger age, do you find that they grow in that trajectory a lot quicker and a lot, they're just more in tune? And someone like me that never touched it when I was younger and maybe was a little too shy and kind of wish I went back and I did it. Like, is there massive benefit in doing this at a young age?
Yeah, I always compare it to learning a new language. When you're younger, you're just picking it up a lot quicker. There are fewer barriers. You know, you're less harsher on yourself, right? Whereas adults were like, oh, you know, do I have time for this? Or am I really going to get it now? Yeah, that I'm in my 30s, 40s. Kids are so receptive to this. Even if it's challenging, they're still trying to figure it out. And I've met kids who know certain serial numbers, some of these components in these kits, and I've never met them before. Wow. And I'm always blown out of the water because I'm like, how do you know that? How do you know that this Wi-Fi module is an ESP8266? And they'll show off, you know, like this used to happen a lot at maker fairs. They would come up to the table and be like, oh, I know this component. And they were probably in like fifth grade. And that's just a good example. Like, you know, I didn't know what a Wi-Fi module until I was in my 20s. So this kid's like, what, 15 years ahead of the ball game, you know? Like, so I look at that and I think, okay, this kid, if he goes into this, if he ends up developing an interest and ends up doing his own thing in technology, I'm sure he's going to, who knows where he'll end up. You know, probably working at some either at Google or some big semiconductor company out there, like Boeing, who knows?
Google, Tesla, SpaceX, start their own company, move to Silicon Valley, change the world. But it all starts with these STEM kits at a young age, you know, getting their hands on it at a young age and gaining that interest. I love this. Yeah. Were you that nerdy kid building things, or you mentioned that you've been in education pretty much your whole career. Like, did you aspire to be an educator? Tell me a little bit about how that came about.
That's funny. I really didn't jump into any sort of coding or robotics until high school. My best friend at the time was involved in the robotics team. So he was one of the reasons why I ended up joining. And then I continued into college. Didn't really get into it as much as I wanted to, but it was something I was always curious about. You know, my mom put me in a bunch of different activities growing up, and I sort of wish she had put me in some of these like coding classes. You know, there weren't really a bunch of them when I was a kid, or at least to my knowledge. It was really in college that I ended up becoming even more interested in it, because I coached a few of the robotics teams in the Rochester City School area. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to work with kids who had never built their own robot before, and sort of become their own, be their mentor and prepare them for the annual competition that we used to have every year. That's for me, it's very much that it's getting kids to at least consider it as a possible career path. You know, I'm not forcing anybody to do this. It's more getting them to think a little more broadly about technology and how they can use it, and eventually do something big after they graduate from high school or college.
Yeah, you don't want to coerce anyone, force them into it, but yeah, they think about it broadly, they get interest, and then they can take it. It can be a soft skill that they learn a little bit out on the side, and maybe they're just a little nerdy and know a little bit about it, or they can go and basically start building spaceships and create a whole new world. It's theirs to choose where to go.
One example I like to use, we had a family that subscribed for a couple of years. And it was actually, I think she was in seventh grade, teenage girl who had built almost all of our projects. Her dad was unfortunately diagnosed with ALS. And she ended up reprogramming one of our Wi-Fi robots that she built to help her dad, because there was very limited motor function in his hands and arms. She was able to program it so that he could use Alexa to move things around, you know, whether it was like a drink or her food or whatnot. And she captured this on video, and I thought it was the coolest thing. But that's like sort of like the pinnacle of why we created Thimble is we want kids to become creative and thoughtful so they can solve challenges like that. And in this case, it meant a lot because it was her own dad. So, you know, and then little things here and there have happened like that over the years. And that it always makes me excited to hear those stories, because that's really what we're trying to do.
Yeah, that I feel that. That's a fascinating story. I know you can't have a million of those. That's incredible. But I do want to hear maybe one or two more case studies or success stories of, you know, a student or a family together that basically utilized Thimble and their experience and what they got out of it.
Yeah, we had one father from Brazil who reached out to us saying that he had purchased this for his kids and didn't really expect to be building it with them. And after they built one of the robot projects, he reached out to me and said that they had so much fun, and that he was almost even contemplating changing his career and wishing he could go back to school, like MIT, to learn about interplanetary jetpacks. And, you know, again, those are one of those emails that just make you smile, because they're like, all right, cool. This is, you know, what I'm trying to do as well, not just for the kid, but for the parents as well.
Yeah, I like to mention families, because it's a great experience for the parents to do this with the kids and, you know, teach some old dog some new tricks, and the kids can ultimately probably teach their parents a thing or two once they get deep dived into Thimble. Great. Wow. So this is one thing I should have done that I forgot to do. And I think my listeners are smart enough to know that they should go to the show notes so they can back this campaign, but I haven't mentioned it yet. So let's mention, how do we back Thimble? It's in the show notes, but how do we follow you? How do we back Thimble? What's the best way to support you guys?
Yeah, you can find our campaign at Republic, and that's republic.co/Thimble.
Perfect. So easy peasy, republic.co/thimble. Forgot about that. I wanted to throw that in there. Before, I wanted to go into just some fun, easygoing, get-to-know Oscar questions, because at the end of the day, you're the founder of Thimble, but you're also just an ordinary guy, or like all of us, right? So it's funny because I have two shows on this network that are similar, Learn, Speak, Teach and Rochester Business Connections. This, as people should know by now, is Learn, Speak, Teach. Ultimately, because I think you're doing big things and I wanted to introduce this to a national audience, but you do live in the Rochester, Buffalo area. You went to U of R. So let's do some of the nerdy Rochester questions and just ask you, you know, what do you love about the region? I mean, you could have taken this and moved anywhere, right? What kept you here? What do you like about Western New York?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I came up to college early 2000s, and then I lived in Rochester for about 15 years, and I could have moved. I had the option to move to New York City and the Bay Area, and a couple of things kept me here. One, I was in a relationship, but two, I mean, the cost of living is great. There are no natural disasters. There's plenty to do. I'm a big nature guy, so, you know, between the Adirondacks, the Finger Lake area, and Canada, you're going to find so much to do. So, you know, I've really built a life up here. It's the last 15 years that I've lived here between Rochester and Buffalo. I have nothing but really good things to say about it.
That's what I like to hear. It's always a good reminder that there's no natural disasters.
I know. I mean, blizzards, you know, but I'll take that over a forest fire.
Yes. Snow is, I wouldn't call it a disaster. It's just natural.
The
entire town's not gonna, you know, fall to smithereens. So we'll be all right.
Well, the first time I moved to Buffalo, it was November of 2014, which was November, and we got like seven to 10 feet of snow.
Wow!
I mean, that was a lot.
You get the Bills just played a couple of days ago and it was snowing and I'm like, it's coming for us. By the time this comes out, we're going to have plenty of snow. We're used to it. Lake effect. Yeah. But enough talk about snow. Let's go rapid fire. This is where I ask just short either or you can fill in the blank questions. It's like Family Feud, that it's quick response, best answer wins, but it's like, whose line is it anyway? That the points don't matter. They're completely subjective to Oscar. So, yeah, you ready for some rapid fire here?
Sure.
We'll get it started with coffee or tea.
Tea.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Mornings or evenings?
Evenings.
How late do you stay up?
Anywhere between 11 and 1.
It's not too bad. Favorite season?
Fall.
Favorite social media platform?
Probably Facebook.
This is the most polarizing one, but iOS or Android?
iOS. I've given Android a shot, but iOS.
Are you more of a, so you're going into a meeting, you want to get pumped up. Are you more a music guy or let's put on a podcast and learn kind of guy?
I'm more of a music guy.
Cool. Yeah. And we'll do one more. Fill in the blank with three, either books, podcast, video series, something that I can just go and learn something new today. Where do you learn some of this stuff from, Oscar?
I read a lot. I go on Amazon. I usually try to buy a book every month. Mm. I think the one that I'm... it's under my laptop. Well, I'm going to take it over here. But currently, my friends think I'm super boring. I'm currently reading the Customer Success Professionals Handbook because customer success is a big deal. Something I don't know very much about. So I always try to learn something. The book I read before this was, I can't remember the name of the title, but it's by Clyde Barker. I'm a big horror fan. So
okay.
I'd try to change it up. You know, it depends. I know that I gave you two there. Can't remember what I read before that though.
Fair enough. The third one can be thimble. That's something that we should learn something new today. And say it one more time. Well, what's the website that we can go on and back and it ultimately own a share? It's not a huge amount, but a share of Thimble, we can be part of it.
Yes. So you can find us at republic.co/thimble.
Perfect. And what else, man? Is there something that we missed? I am new to the game here. So what are some of those beginner questions that people ask you all the time that I personally didn't ask today? Anything else we should touch on?
I mean, I think really, there's so much that's gone into this journey, Ben, yeah. To be honest. I realized I didn't really talk about my teaching experience. I was a math teacher for a couple of years at an inner city school. And that's also really where I discovered that the education space is so screwed up, because you had kids who aspired to go into tech. And by tech, I mean kids would be like, I want to go to the moon one day and be an astronaut. And we had no programs or resources at the school to get these kids interested. So, part of the story and what I meant to bring up earlier is that's probably the pivotal moment in my career where I thought, okay, I want to make a personal commitment to solve this challenge. And, I didn't really know very much about selling in K-12 or starting a business for that matter. Mm-hmm. And, it's funny because I was originally thinking I was going to go to business school back in the day after U of R, and this ended up being my long haul business school in the end. I decided not to do business school. This has been more rewarding, and I don't know, I'm sure both would have equally brought me to some kind of debt, but maybe I chose a cheaper route because it's like a couple hundred grand to go into business school.
Well, you found the challenge. You decided to capitalize on it passionately. It's rewarding. You probably would have went to business school and then figured out that this was a challenge and just went into it anyways. So maybe you saved yourself the cost, but ultimately, it's the headache of learning as you go. But that's the ultimate MBA experience, right?
It is, yes. And that's very much, I think, what would have happened, because I was looking at business schools with entrepreneurship programs. Mm-hmm. So I would have, naturally found my way into building something.
And I notice, as I said, that, experience is the ultimate MBA. There's people listening that are like, nope, that's not true. I'm an MBA and blah, blah. At the end of the day, it takes both, it takes the education, but with Thimble, you guys provide the education. It's up to the user to take the initiative to use that education to go out there, crush it, to learn something new, to make change. And I just appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today. I think I joked with you when we first met that maybe I didn't, but inside I'm thinking to myself, if this guy becomes like a billionaire because he changed the world with Thimble, I'll be that little guy that interviewed him, right at the tipping point of that. So, and the listeners, they're part of that as well. And they can go to the show notes, click that link, and actually own a portion of the company as well. So everybody's going to win after this, man.
Thanks so much, Ben. Yeah, I really appreciate it, even just sharing my story on your podcast. So, and I also like to put myself out there too. I've got here because of all the help I got along the way, and a lot of people didn't have to do that. So mm-hmm. If anybody ever has any questions, especially if it's like around starting an edtech company or even just getting started, or crowdfunding. Yeah, I always like to, I'm always happy to share insight and little gold nuggets to help people.
How should people connect? Should they Facebook, email, LinkedIn, watch a video? How should they get those gold nuggets from you?
Yeah, they can find me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty responsive on there. And then they can shoot me a quick note. My email is Oscar, my first name, Oscar@thimble.io.
Easy peasy. Listen, man, this has been a ton of fun. Thank you for taking the time today with me, Oscar. We'll do it again.
Thanks a lot, Ben. Really appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.